Let's turn into our Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 25. That's where we'll be tonight. David is running from King Saul. The king is chasing him down out of envy, out of spite. And the king is not doing well. He is watching his kingdom slip from his fingers, from his own grasp. God has taken it away from him because of disobedience. With that, he has chased his replacement. He's chasing him out of town, chasing him throughout the wilderness. David finds himself in the wilderness now, hiding out in caves. And in chapter 24, he had the opportunity to actually put a stop to his running, put an end to his miserable situation by taking the life of his enemy. He could have killed King Saul, but he didn't. David had a conscience problem. His problem was is that he believed that if the king was in his position by God's design, and it wasn't his right, it wasn't his place to remove him. It was God's place. And so though David had the opportunity to kill his enemy, he chose not to and let him live. Saul had a momentary softness of heart, softening of heart. And he says in verse 17 of chapter 24, "You have rewarded me with good, whereas I have rewarded you with evil. And you have shown this day how you have dealt with me, for when the Lord delivered me into your hand, you did not kill me." This so touched Saul that he said in verse 20, "I know indeed that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand." Therefore, and he made him swear that he would take care of his family. And David, of course, said so and swore. And this softening, however, did not fool David. Not that it didn't fool him, but yes, it may have touched him. But David didn't yet feel safe, feel as if Saul was going to lay off. And so we see David swore to Saul in verse 22. And Saul went home, but David and his men went up to the stronghold. They didn't come home to open arms. They stayed in the wilderness, waiting to see what was going to happen. Probably a very good idea, as we're going to see as the story develops, that Saul did not cease from his pursuit of David. But things were starting to change, and that's where we come into chapter 25. Samuel died. Samuel died, and the Israelites gathered together and lamented for him and buried him at his home in Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. So he's still in the wilderness, unable to mourn really of his friend, the man who appointed him and anointed him with oil as the next king. But notice, here is one verse dedicated to the death of this man who has influenced the nation so greatly. Just a simple little verse. Others, they were, you spend a great deal of time hearing their last words. Samuel really didn't have many last words, at least not in this particular case. We're going to see him again before this book is finished. But an interesting little verse here. Samuel died. It's over. He's gone. The prophet's gone. Now, the nation is left in the hands of King Saul. But remember, as we've studied and gone through Judges, judges were raised up, and so long as there was a judge over the nation, the people did right by God, at least the righteous judge brought righteousness in the lives of the people. When the judge died, well, the people backslid again. They went into problems until the Lord raised up another judge. And so this seems to be the problem. The idea here, maybe the kings will now help them to stay true to God. We know the history. It didn't quite work out that way. How does one stay true to God but through the commitment of our heart? You know, we have this word, accountability. And so often what happens is we think that we need someone to hold us accountable. I want you to hold me accountable. I have difficulty with this thing or these thoughts or that. And to some degree, it's a good thing to have that. But reality is, if you don't have a will to follow after God, no amount of accountability is going to be able to convert your will. You've got to have a will that says, I want to follow God. I want to please the Lord with all of my heart, with all of my life. And though all others may forsake the Lord, I want to please Him. And that has to be a determination of our own hearts as individuals, not collectively as a people, not because a king or a judge or a pastor or a shepherd or anyone stands over us with a staff and says, you must, you will. Anybody can follow that way, and that's not the way that the Lord would have us follow. The Lord showed me this as the pastor over the Bible college in Austria. When we were there, we would have people come over, and they would come over and they'd be so excited about being in that small Christian environment. And I can tell you, it's real easy to live for God when you have no contact whatsoever with the outside world. But you see those same people, after they've been so on fire for the Lord, and you think they're going to burn for God forever. They'll die for the Lord, and they swear they're going to do this great thing and that great thing. And you watch them go back home to America, and they go back to their normal lives, and then they fizzle out. They backslide completely. I think that's a very sad thing. So long as they were under the strict environment, if you will, of the castle and the communal type living, boy, everyone was so on fire with God. Give them a little bit of freedom, and their fire seems to dwindle because their choices tend to go in the wrong direction. It becomes a matter of one's will, a matter of the heart of men. And you can have a judge over the nation that's going to direct you and lead you and guide you, but does your relationship depend on that person, on that judge? Or does your relationship to God depend on your determination to be pleasing in His sight? Do you wake up with every day and say, Lord, I don't feel like being a good Christian, but my desire today is to please You? And if that becomes your desire, though you may stumble and fall through the course of the day, through the course of the week, if that is your desire, then God looks upon that desire. That's what He's looking for. And He seems to come alongside of us and sweep us up, if you will, and carry us through life, because the desire of our hearts is what God is looking for. And that desire is what pleases Him. We'll not be perfect, but a desire could be perfect. And that's what He's looking for in the Christian's life, a desire to live pleasing to the Lord. Now Samuel has died. We're going to see that David eventually will become the king. And as long as David's the king, it seems the nation stayed as true as it could to the ways of God. But soon David will be taken out, and we'll see the people going the way of the world. Very sad situation, something we don't want happening to us. Now, it tells us in verse 2, there was a man in Maon, whose business was in Carmel, and the man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. Now, the celebration of the shearing of the sheep, this was a big time, a big festival. They would cut off the wool. The wool, of course, would be sold and or used in the home, mostly sold to other people. And this brought in a great harvest or great amount of wealth into the home. This man was apparently very, very rich. This was also a time traditionally in this day when you would host a big celebration, a big party. You'd take some of the sheep or some of the goats and you'd slaughter them and you'd feed the helpers, especially the shearers of the sheep. And there was a big celebration, a big festival, a lot of extra people. You'd call in the neighbors and let's have a good old time. It's time to shear the sheep. And that's the history behind this. You'll see why that's important in just a minute. Well, the name of the man was Nabal and the name of his wife Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding and beautiful appearance. But the man was harsh and evil in his doings. He was of the house of Caleb. Now, the Bible doesn't say things just because. It tells us something very interesting here. Abigail was a wonderful lady, it seems. She had a good head on her shoulders in more ways than one. And beyond that, it tells us that Nabal was a really bad guy. It says he was harsh and evil in the things that he did. Now, when David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep, David sent 10 young men and said, and David said to the young men, go up to Carmel, go to Nabal and greet him in my name. And thus you shall say to him who lives in prosperity, peace be to you, peace to your house, and peace to all that you have. Now I have heard that you have shearers, Your shepherds were with us, and we did not hurt them, nor was there anything missing from them at all while all the while they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever comes to your hand to your servants and to your son, David. Very humble request. On this day of celebration, on a feast day, typically, they would be generous. They would share with people. Now, David's saying, I'm not just anyone. I've been with your workers for quite some time now. And while we were with them in the wilderness, we protected your sheep. We protected your herds, your flocks. And so we thought maybe you might show some kindness to us. There's a group of us, you know, just a small group of about 600. We're kind of hungry. We'd like a little bit of food. And being that you're shearing your sheep, normally that's a generous period. Would you mind helping us? Give us a sandwich, you know, a couple of Cokes, that kind of thing, some bag of chips. And they were looking for a handout. And in a sense, a reciprocation of generosity because David and his men protected him. Well, when David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all these words in the name of David and waited. Then Nabal answered David's servants and said, "Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays who break away, each from his master." So here we see now, Nabal has probably heard some rumors about David. And we see you're a breakaway group of men. Well, we find out from later on in verse 14, Nabal actually cursed these guys and were very, very rude and considered them, called them worthless, like you're just worthless bums. Why don't you go get a job and stop, you know, begging for food? Go get your own food and stuff like that. He said in verse 11, "Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men when I don't know where they are from?" So David's young men turned on their heels and went back, and they came and told him all these words. Now, you know, you're David, and hospitality was very big in this day, very huge. There almost was no expectation in David's heart that this man would turn him down. It was just a given. Of course he's going to give us food. He's a wealthy man. And had he read the book of James, he would have known that James clearly made it a statement that to see to do good and not do it is sin. And here he had an opportunity to do good. And of course the man, as we found out earlier, was evil. And so he did not do good. Here was a very wealthy man. Something that the Bible talks a lot about, really, is the wealth of individuals. And the Bible tells us it's very difficult for wealthy people to let go of their wealth for the sake of the kingdom. And those who do, the Lord seems to bless them abundantly for doing so. But when they hold back, God seems to have a way of getting it from you one way or another. And this is not a threatening thing at all. It's just that God knows how to twist one's arm if he has to. God wants to use monetary means in the wealth of even the wicked to bless the righteous. And God seems to have a way of doing that. Well, this man was a little stingy. If you're a stingy Christian, repent. You're not supposed to be. Jesus Christ is a generous Lord, and he expects all who live for him to be the same way. Let go of your things. Let go of them. Let go of them by your choice. And that's the way God would have us to live. Be generous with what God has given you. If you're wealthy, you should be even more generous, because that's the way God would have us be. This man is an example of what happens when you're stingy. You begin to hoard everything for yourself. Now, it also shows us something else about King David. In verse 13, "Then David said to his men, 'Every man gird on his sword.'" So every man girded on his sword, and David also girded on his sword. "And about 400 men went with David, and 200 stayed with the supplies." Interesting. Now, he had a man that was chasing him, throwing spears at him, threatening to kill him. He had a man that chased him out of his country, away from his wife. We'll find out at the end of this chapter that Saul actually gave David's wife to another man. David had the guy in his sights and didn't kill him. Here's a man that refused to give him a sandwich, and he was about to kill him. Notice what he says. Notice what happens here. Now, one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he reviled him. And that reviled is the word that I was referring to. That means he really said some nasty things about David, and we kind of got the sanitized version here in these verses. It was a very bad thing that was said. But, he says in verse 15, the servant did, the men were very good to us, and we were not hurt, nor did we miss anything as long as we accompanied them when we were in the fields. Notice, we accompanied them. David didn't attach themselves to the shepherds. The shepherds attached themselves to this protecting army. They were a wall to us both by night and day, all the time we were with them keeping the sheep. Now therefore know and consider what you will do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his household, for he is such a scoundrel that one cannot speak to him. Now these are the servants talking about their master, the boss over their lives, perhaps even an owner. And this guy was so evil, so wicked, so hard-headed, and stuck in his ways that nobody could talk to him. You probably don't know anyone like that. But this is someone that is a scoundrel, he's called. The word scoundrel literally means a son of the devil. This guy is related to Satan. You probably have a boss similar to that. Or perhaps a husband. Or a wife. Hard-headed, stuck in his ways. I'm the only right one. Nobody knows but me. Don't tell me a thing because I've heard it all already and this is the way it's going to be. God has ways of dealing with people like that. Well, Abigail, remember, she was the level-headed one. She was the one that had a good head on her shoulders. She made haste and took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep already dressed, 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 clusters of raisins, and 200 cakes of figs, and loaded them on donkeys. I'd say they were stocked. They had quite a bit of a storehouse going there, and Nabal probably didn't even notice it missing. Isn't that a shame? And she said to her servants, go on before me, see, I am coming after you. But she did not tell her husband Nabal. Probably Nabal would have put a stop to it, and then she would have had to gone behind his back. So it was, as she rode on the donkey, that she went down under the cover of the hill, and there were David and his men coming down toward her, and she met them. Now David said, surely in vain I have protected all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belongs to him, and he has repaid me evil for good. May God do so and more also to the enemies of David, if I leave one male of all who belong to him by morning light. Now what did we read there in chapter 24? In verse 17, then he said, Saul said to David, you are more righteous than I, for you have rewarded me good, whereas I have rewarded you with evil. What's happening here? What is David doing? Over a sandwich, he's now going to wipe out the entire male population of Nabal's staff over a sandwich. Do you see how very often what happens, and I've been in situations like this, you handle the stress so long, after the stress kind of wears you down and wears you down, it seems we snap on the littlest things. Have you ever done that? You just say, someone looks at you like, what in the world are you getting all worked up about? Well, they don't know the history of what's been happening over the last several weeks or months. And so this little thing, this little insignificant piece of sandwich sends you into a conniption. And you just go off completely and lose all sense of reality. Do you see how imbalanced this is? He's so righteous with the king. Maybe this is a respecter of persons here. Maybe he sees the king and the position and he was moved by the position. Oh, the position. Maybe he was thinking, one day I'm going to be king and I want people to think of me that way, so I'm going to treat him really with respect. But could this also be a sign, an indication of what might be coming if David doesn't learn this lesson? You see, grace was fine as so long as it was going upward towards someone who he perceived deserved it. But this man, in David's mind and eyes, did not deserve it. And he has now become a respecter of persons. Both repaid evil for David's good. But David chose to show kindness and grace toward someone, perhaps only for a position. James warned us about that. About paying more attention to someone who has a higher position simply because you think you might gain something from it. Now, that's not to say that what David did with Saul was wrong. What he did with Saul was right. But that same kindness needs to be passed on to those underneath you. Like in David's mind, Nabal was beneath him. One day, David was going to become Nabal's king. What kind of a king would David be to Nabal? God was teaching David something so precious, so valuable, and now you understand why God allowed Saul to be Saul in David's life. Because God never wants David to be Saul. But in this case, he is. He's just like Saul. So when we find ourselves in difficult situations, pressure cookers, times where we feel like the cork is about to blow, and it doesn't take a major trial for it to happen. It just takes someone who, he didn't smile at me. He didn't say hello to me. He insulted me. She said this or she said that. That's it. I'm leaving the church. I know we laugh, but it happens. It happens all the time because we're human. Many of us are like David. Many of us are like Nabal. Many of us are like Saul. And we often are put into situations of life because God is saying, I don't want you to be like that. I want you to be like my son. I want you to be like Jesus, who put up with things like this because he understood that people are weak. And he understood that people are in bondage to themselves, to the flesh. And all of the trials of life are designed to teach us spiritual truths and spiritual things that our natural minds and our natural flesh cannot understand unless we're thrown into such pressure cookers. David was not in a place. It's like, I can't take one more thing. And so he snaps. David needed to learn grace in both directions. He needed to learn patience in both directions, because he certainly displays less patience with Nabal than he did with Saul. Now, when Abigail saw David, now, verses 21 and 22, they are verses of, the Lord is giving us some insight into what David was feeling and thinking and probably even said to his men as they're riding along. You know, they're riding along and seeing, you know, this guy, I can't believe he was so rude to me. I mean, I protected him, I did kindness to him, and now he's showing evil toward me. I'm going to kill him. If there is a male left alive in his family tomorrow, well, I'm shame on me. And in his mind, he was completely justified. And then comes this frail, level-headed, beautiful woman, Abigail. Now, when Abigail saw David, she dismounted quickly from the donkey, fell on her face before David, and bowed down to the ground. So she fell at his feet and said, "On me, my lord, on me let this iniquity be. Please let your maidservant speak in your ears and hear the words of your maidservant." Now, she's taking the blame for her knuckleheaded husband. She's taking the blame. "Put it on me, Lord. It was my fault. I should have been there to greet your men, and I wasn't. Unfortunately, you got stuck with my husband." Notice what she says. "Please let not my lord regard this scoundrel Nabal, For his name is, as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is his game. Nabal is his name, means fool. Can you imagine naming your kid fool? You know, we really need to think about what names we saddle our children with. These guys, I mean, his mom and dad woke up one day and said, I think we're going to name him Fool. That's a good name, Fool. Well, his wife, apparently, you know, sometimes you kind of stick your kid with a name and he grows into it. This kid, they named him Fool and he became a fool. He grew up and she tells him, look, I'm sorry for this scoundrel, this son of the devil, because, you know, his mother named him Fool, and sure enough, he's got foolishness in his life. He grew up to be a man who is foolish. But I, your maidservant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now, therefore, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, since the Lord has held you back from coming to bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek harm for my Lord be as Nabal. She said, basically, you know, he's a fool. Let all your enemies become like a fool, like Nabal. He's a foolish man. Don't even pay attention to him. Disregard him. That's what she said in verse 25. Please let not my Lord regard this guy. Don't even pay attention to him. He's just a foolish, knuckleheaded man. He's not worth your attention. Don't be offended by him. In verse 26, as the Lord lives and your soul lives, the Lord has held you back from doing something foolish. The Lord has held you back from coming down to Nabal's level. Notice what she said, from coming to bloodshed and from avenging yourself. How hard is that? Boy, do we want to avenge ourselves? Do we want to defend ourselves? It's the natural instinct. Self-preservation. That's one of our greatest drives in the human mind, in the human nature, is to protect ourselves, to defend ourselves. Jesus, of course, taught us as he went as a sheep to the slaughter, as a lamb led off to the slaughter to be sacrificed. And we're supposed to take on that same type of mentality. And the mentality is, God will defend me. Remember, he said that when it dealt with Saul. The guy said, hey, the Lord has brought your enemy. He's right there. Kill him. And what did David say? David said, chapter 24, and so verse 3, so he came to the sheepfold by the road where there was a cave, and he went into the cave in verse 4. The man of David said to him, this is the day of which the Lord said to you, behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as it seems good to you. And David arose and cut off the corner of Saul's robe, and it troubled David's heart. Remember there in verse 5? And he said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him. And David restrained his servants with these words. He held the men back from doing something foolish, from shedding blood that was not his to shed. And here he's moving to do that, avenging himself. How dare that man, that person, that guy Nabal treat me that way? Doesn't he know who I am? I'm David. I'm going to be the next king. I could have his head at any time if I want. He can't treat me that way. I'll show him a thing or two. Every male will be gone. Every person in Israel will fear me. But is that the kind of leader he wanted to be? Is that the kind of king he would become? One who ruled by fear? Man, don't you cross David. Did you hear what he did to Nabal and his group? Man, don't cross David. But the woman shows great wisdom. The Lord has held you back. And he's even kept you from doing a foolish thing like defending yourself. 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 Self. Yourself. Did you know that word self is in the word yourself? Self. And that's the thing that gets us in trouble all the time. The self, the flesh, that nature that protects us. And you know, as you're hearing me saying this, you're sitting there saying, I can't do that. That's impossible. I'm going to protect myself. Of course, anyone messes with me or my family, I'm going to protect them. And that's how we think. Of course, it's how we think. But it is the flesh. It is the flesh. We're supposed to let the Lord be our defense. Let the Lord protect us. David was doing fine as long as he was dealing with Saul. He was letting the Lord defend him and take care of any rumors that were going on around him until this guy. It's like he'd had it up to here. And I know that feeling. I know that feeling. And I know God purposely turns up that gas under that pot that he put us in. Because he wants it to boil just a little bit more to find our breaking point. Where is the breaking point? Where is it going to be? And then it goes. There it is. Good. Now that he sees it, I want to show him that it's not a good thing. And he turns it up a little more. And someone has said, if God is turning up, if the fire seems to be turned up underneath you, keep your mind on the fact that it is God who has his hand on the thermostat. He's always doing, or always in charge of such things. We will never be tempted beyond what we're able to bear, ever. He has a good plan. David has to learn this lesson. It's imperative that he learns it, or he will become a king similar to Saul. And now this present which your maidservant has brought to my Lord, let it be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your maidservant. Do you see her humility here? She's not blaming it on her knuckle-headed husband now. It's my fault. I should have been there. For the Lord will certainly make for my Lord an enduring house, because my Lord fights the battles of the Lord, and evil is not found in you throughout your days. She's heard rumors about David too. Do you hear this? The Lord is going to make my Lord an enduring house. The Lord is going to make David's house last forever. An enduring house. Your kingdom will reign and stand forever. And this is fulfilled in Jesus Christ. He is the king of the house of David that reigns forever and ever. Jesus, the bloodline of Jesus, comes through David. Yet a man has risen to pursue you, in verse 29, and seek your life. But the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord your God. The lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the pocket of a sling. And it shall come to pass, when the Lord has done for my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you, and has appointed you ruler over Israel. Who is this woman? It's like she's got a direct line to God or something. She's heard all of these rumors, and it seems as if David's the only one who may not yet get this truth. David, you're going to be appointed. And so it should bring a confidence in his life that he doesn't have to grab the kingdom. He doesn't need to take the kingdom. God is going to give him the kingdom. And so often that is the mistake of being young and immature in the faith. We try and take when God wants to give it to us in time. That's another lesson David would have to learn. The Lord is going to appoint him. In verse 31, that he said that this will be no grief to you, nor offense of heart to my Lord, either that you have shed blood without cause, or that my Lord has avenged himself. But when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your maidservant. In other words, she's saying, you're going to be the king. And when you become the king, this incident is not even going to enter your memory banks anymore. It's just so insignificant. Right now it seems big. And once again, you and I have been there, right? When you're in the midst of a trial, boy, it's so huge. But give it about 6 months. Give it about 6 years. And you realize that was just a little stepping stone that brings us to where God wants us today. And we look back at it and almost don't even remember it. I have a real bad memory of things. I don't remember a lot of things anymore. And I really have a struggle. I my wife will tell me stories of things we've done. And I said, Was I there? I don't even remember doing it. But she says that I did, and there were pictures, and there I was. I was there. But I really don't remember it. But those are things, and a lot of times that when I see the pictures, then the memory comes back of maybe the time period that I was in, the stress that was there, the worries that we had, the trials that hurt us, that cut us deeply, individuals that we had conflict with, or whatever it may be. And I realized, boy, I remember those days. They're painful, but I don't think I could be as strong as I am in the Lord now had I not gone through those difficult times then. This is something Abigail is showing such great wisdom. This will be so insignificant to you, but David, you have to go through this, and you need to go through it righteously. David was making a mistake. And so David said to Abigail in verse 32, "Blessed is the Lord God of Israel who sent you this day to meet me. And blessed is your advice, and blessed are you, because you have kept me this day from coming to bloodshed and from avenging myself with my own hand." My own hand. "You kept me from using my hands to avenge myself, and that would make me guilty." Do you see? He was innocent up until this point. If he uses his hands now to bring revenge or vengeance against his enemy, now he's guilty. And now there will be blood upon his hands. David, we're going to find out, does not pass the test later. He's going to be okay with Nabal, but later on, we're going to find he makes terrible mistakes with his life. That's why the consequence for him is that he would not be allowed to build God a house. What was the reason? There was blood on his hands. David became a murderer. And because not a warrior. A warrior is one thing. David was a murderer. And he killed people unnecessarily so. And God would not allow him the privilege of building a house. That privilege was reserved for Solomon, who would succeed him. So David praises Abigail. And he said, "You've kept me from doing a terrible thing." In verse 34, "For indeed, as the Lord God of Israel lives, who has kept me back from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, surely by morning light, no males would have been left to Nabal." So David received from her. That's a sign of a great, mature Christian and leader, I might say. To be able to receive from someone, to be able to hear someone else's criticism and advice, and be able to say, "Wow, I was wrong. I was heading down the wrong path." And I think too often we find ourselves involved in pride that keeps us from hearing sound advice and sound reason. So David received from her hand what she had brought him. Obviously, I stopped there in the right spot on purpose. But that's not the context. The idea is David received from her the advice, as he's going to say at the end of the verse. But at this point, he received the food, the things that she brought, said to her, "Go up in peace to your house. See, I have heeded your voice and respected your person." So he heard her. Very good indication of a good, mature person. Christian, and that's the way a Christian needs to be. I'll hear your rebuke, I'll hear your correction, and I will receive it. Now Abigail went to Nabal, and there he was holding a feast in his house like the feast of a king. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. Therefore she told him nothing, little or much, until morning light. So it was in the morning, when the wine had gone from Nabal, and his wife had told him these things, that his heart died within him, and he became like a stone. Now, I'm not sure how you might look at that. It could be that he became so afraid, because what did she say to him? "I don't know that you realize, my dear foolish husband, but David was on his way here with several hundred men, and he was going to kill you. If I hadn't have stopped him, you'd be dead right now." So that could have, whoa. Oh my goodness, what a knucklehead I've been. I don't know if that's what he was thinking. Or maybe he was mad at his wife for bringing all that food over to him. "I said no, and you better, I'm not talking to you anymore." Either way, the Lord took care of it. In verse 38, it happened after about 10 days that the Lord struck Nabal and he died. There's so many things to be learned here. I think of the rich fool, he's called, the man who thought only of himself and wanted to build more silos for his grain. And then the Lord spoke and said, "You fool, this day your soul is required of you." He was thinking all for himself, and he didn't have a chance to enjoy any of it for himself because his time was so short on the earth. Nabal is such a fool. Lived for himself and didn't think of anything, didn't think of his future, didn't think of anything at all. And the Lord came to him and said, "You fool, Nabal, your life is over. It's finished. Now what? Who will these things be? Where will these wealth that you've inherited or that you've amassed for yourself, who will they go to then?" It's the parable of the rich fool that Jesus spoke about. There's another way of looking at this too when you think about this, and that David almost rushed it. 10 days earlier, David was going to kill him. But the Lord had already had a plan to eliminate this foolish man from the earth. And David would have rushed the plan of God. And he would have had this on him his whole life. David was stopped from doing this. He heeded the good advice of the woman and stayed away from doing something that was going to harm his reputation, and he did a very good thing. Well, it goes on. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord who has pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal and has kept his servant from evil. For the Lord has returned the wickedness of Nabal on his own head." And David sent and proposed to Abigail to take her as wife. Now that's a good idea. Proverbs 31, who can find a virtuous woman? Well, when he found one, he took her. That's a good idea. You find a good woman, if you're single, get her. But notice David sees this too. He says, holy smokes, God has kept me from evil. And more than that, he said, Nabal got his just deserts. This was avenged by God. I didn't have to do this. And so now he's learning something from this, which is going to play out very important in the next chapter. Now, when the servants of David had come to Abigail at Carmel, they spoke to her saying, David sent us to ask you, sent you to ask you to become his wife. Then she arose, bowed her face to the earth and said, you betcha. And so here I am. And she washed her feet. I guess that's important. And Abigail rose in haste and rose on a donkey. And rode on a donkey. The haste is important. Maybe she was hoping she wouldn't. She had to get there before he would change his mind. Attended by five of her maidens, and she followed the messengers of David and became his wife. And David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel, and so both of them were his wives. But Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Palti, the son of Laish, who was from Galim. So probably he gave his daughter away to spite David, but David collected women. He collected a lot of wives. In 2 Samuel, we'll see more of that. He had several wives and many multiple children through them. It's not a biblical practice, though God seems to have allowed it with his righteous men. But Solomon confirms to us what we all suspected, that there is much vanity in collecting certain things in life. And collecting women like that is a foolish endeavor. And Solomon confirms it for us in his writings. What we're going to find out, and I'll summarize chapter 26 just briefly, and then we'll study it verse by verse next week. But David's going to have one more opportunity to kill Saul. And as we see this happening, and I want to tie it in with what we see happening with Nabal, because David wanted to take matters into his own hands. And David has another opportunity to do so in chapter 26. And then he sees David and Saul and Abner, Abner is his right-hand man and supposed to be his bodyguard, and they were sound asleep. It tells us it was the will of God, or the sleep of God that came over these guys so that they couldn't wake up for nothing. Abishai was David's right-hand man, said to David in verse 8 of chapter 26, God has delivered your enemy into your hand. And there's David standing over Saul. And a spear, it tells us in verse 7, was stuck in the ground right next to Saul. And there was a jug of water next to Saul's head. And Abishai tells us, he said, God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day. Now, therefore, please let me strike him at once with the spear right to the earth, and I will not have to strike him a second time. This guy is a warrior. He said, let me just, I'll kill him. It's over. I won't have to hit him twice. Let me just end it now. Please, let me end it now. But David said to Abishai, do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord, the Lord's anointed, and be guiltless? David knows this. David said furthermore, as the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall go out to battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But take the spear and the jug of water that are by his head and let us go. And that's what they did. Interesting. It's in your hands to take revenge. It's there. And you can do it. And it will feel so good. You know it will feel good. You will love to do it. And to be able to say, I'm going to let the Lord deal with this. And then walk away from it. I like the revenge part. Oh, it feels so good. You know it does. But it's done so much better when God does it. David said, look, God's going to take care of it. God's going to take him out. And that's how Saul dies. You don't want to ruin it by reading ahead to the last chapter. All the way to the last chapter. There's only a few chapters left. You wouldn't want to read ahead to that last chapter to get to the end, to find out how this great story ends. Don't do it. That would ruin the story. Next week we'll, you know, probably get a couple of these chapters, but and you might ruin it by reading ahead to the last chapter, which is only five chapters. So you will see that David has learned this lesson now. That, yeah, I could take him out. But what if God is just about to take him out anyway? Then the guilt would be on me. And I don't want that. I couldn't live with it. Do you saw what happened in that one chapter when David cut the robe of King Saul? His conscience was killing him. He felt guilty for cutting his robe. Imagine what he would feel if he cut his throat. It would be killing him to no repair. He would never be able to overcome it. He would be ineffective as a leader for God because he couldn't handle his own guilt. And David killed a lot of men. A lot. He was a great warrior. Remember, Saul killed his thousands. David, his 10,000s. By the way, that song will come back to haunt him in a couple of chapters because of his reputation of being a warrior. God wants to bring forth your righteousness so long as you're walking innocently and righteously. I believe it was Peter, I can't remember exactly now, I believe Peter wrote that if you're going to be persecuted, let it be for doing good, not because you're guilty of some horrible crime. And as we live for Christ, let us suffer any type of reproach or persecution because we're doing good, we're doing the right thing. And I pray that every one of us would have evil repaid to us for doing good. Actually, I would hope that none of us would have that. But if any evil is going to come our way, may it come because we've done good, not because we deserve the evil, not because we deserve the punishment because we've said or done something terribly wrong. I don't know if this is one of your kids, but we had a prayer request tonight in our prayer meeting at 6. It was quite cute. Obviously written by a kid. And the prayer request was, I want to pray for all of the mean things I said and all of the things I'm going to do to my family. So this is a young person who clearly understood the flesh nature because that's what's going to happen. He or she, he didn't leave a name, it was anonymous, but this is a person who struggles with the flesh nature. That's what we all struggle with. And that temptation for revenge is all part of the flesh. We have to pray that we would become righteous or live or choose the righteous path. Let those things go. Leave it alone. Leave it in the hands of the Lord and be clean of it. And the hardest part, of course, is dealing with the thoughts in our minds. I could have. I should have. What I should have said. What I could have said. I put them up, put them up. You know, we have this fighting nature. We don't want to give into that. We don't want to give into it. It's the flesh. Let the Lord deal with it. And I've been in David's position. I've had to be stopped before because I was ready to take heads off. I've taken a few off in my day, and I'm not proud of it. But the fact of the matter is when God shows his righteous chosen people, he doesn't show them going from one great victory to another. He puts them right here for all of us to see just how dirty and wrinkled they all are. And you know, when I look at David, he looks like you or me. And he was considered a man after God's heart. I want that. God has shown us David in all of his glory, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and he still has accepted him as one of his righteous men. That gives you and me some amazing and tremendous hope. That's good news for us, because we're just as wrinkled and warted up as David is. Some of us worse, some of us better. But God has a way of fixing us all and making us usable. That's why they call him the Redeemer. He redeems the likes of you and me. Thank God for that.